Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I'm Raven, and I've seen CSI thrown through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 3, Episode 17, Crash and Burn. Original air date is March 13th, 2003. Director is Richard J. Lewis. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Josh Berman. And we have a very, very short clip of the Vegas Strip before we kind of like pass over the burbs and then go inside of a bar. But before we continue down that route, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
There are some pretty big Vegas scores.
Two in a row that we hit. We hit our max cap.
19, which is pretty low. Yeah, there's only one other scene the entire rest of the episode.
Oh, wow. Okay, I did notice there's a lot of time inside the lab in this episode.
Yeah, and a lot of inside-to-inside cutting.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I had to do a little like double checking. This is so, the first time I watched this episode, I thought I just missed them all.
No, they just weren't there. Yeah.
I even wrote down the timestamp. I like the when the one other scene happened, the first time I watched it, I went, oh crap, I've not been writing this down.
I've been missing all of them.
And then I was like, nope, there just wasn't another opportunity.
All right. Well, we had a nice little streak of some higher LV scores, not today, but that's all right. You know, such is life sometimes.
Yep.
So we go from the Vegas Strip to a restaurant. I keep referring to it as a bar because I did not see any food. I only saw people drinking.
It looked like a cafe. Like they definitely had tables.
They had tables for sure. But regardless, we're inside of this restaurant / bar. Hank is there. We then see a woman just drive straight in. Just straight into the building.
Barrel in,
chaos, destruction. And
it's
then
a really drawn out view of like the bar manager.
Yes, just staring.
Driving, and I kept waiting for him to be like, get out the way.
Nope.
We do not hold this guy accountable for. He stared at this woman driving in this building at high speeds for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, and made no.
Yeah.
No motion to try to negate damage to people that were inside of the restaurant he was managing. We're then with Grissom, Sarah, and Catherine. They're on scene. Jim Brass is already there. We learned that the accident happened during happy hour. As there's still a lot of things going on, Sarah walks over to Hank, points out that his wrist is broken. He's like trying to, you know, he's an EMT, so he's like trying to perform his duties as an EMT. Sarah points out that his wrist is broken.
This is a great scene for Hank, you know. He's at the scene of a crime. He's here. He's saving people's life. He's putting himself last. He's got a broken wrist.
Mm-hmm,
he's caring about the people, you know, in his life in the moment.
Yep.
You know, and he's just doing it. You're really making you want to like Hank in this scene.
Yeah, we'll follow up on that one, listeners. We pop on over to credits for a bit. We then have Hank being put in a splint, essentially, to like stabilize his wrist. Sarah takes over. I was like, Sarah, you're not Doc Robbins.
Yeah, she's like, can I take over? No, ma'am. You are not medically trained.
Are not Doc Robbins. Like, you are not a medically trained
doctor. I'm sure you can do it if you're just an EMT. You know what I mean? Like, but
yeah, but you know, but she's neither of those things. Just, but
you just as you're dating one doesn't mean. You know.
Yeah. So, you know, but he's saying that he's going to go to the hospital. She's saying that, like, he can call her. Like, if, you know, he needs anything, call her.
I have to say, I literally, first time watching this, went, did they break up? Because, like, there's an awkwardness in the scene.
Mm.
And she doesn't say, like, babe or honey or I love, you know what I mean? And we had that weird scene.
Yeah, but she's working. I mean, she is working.
Yeah, we had that weird scene where it happened before. And I was like, oh, maybe that was it. I was like, did they just gloss over it? And they're just going to tell you that they were broken up later?
They do not. Well, we'll find out. Yeah. Grissom's leaving, but he talks to Sarah first. And he lets her know that Warwick is on the way and that he has to leave. And Sarah's like, well, why? Like, obviously this is like a fairly major crime scene. Like, multiple people are dead. There's multiple fatalities. And he's like, I got gas. And I was like, okay, this is a weird. He admits to a gas leak, but like.
Yeah. This is actually my favorite scene in the whole episode because Chris, she's like, where are you going? He's like, I got gas. And she just like doesn't say anything. She's like, I'm not playing your game, Grissom.
Yeah, she's just like.
And then he just tells her what she actually wanted to know.
Yeah.
And I went, see, that's the best thing. This is the best thing that's going to happen this whole episode because Grissom, like, he's being dumb unnecessarily. And rather than being like, no, man, what are you, you know, where are you going? Why are you leaving?
Yeah.
He's just like, uh-huh. And then he's like, but he, because he wants to, he does deep down wants to tell them. the real answer. He just wanted to be clever first.
He just wanted to be clever and first.
So he has to give it up. And I was like, that's, you got this, Sarah. You got him wrapped around your little finger now.
Yeah. Sarah, this is a good Sarah episode, if nothing else.
Sort of. There are some, I think later on, and maybe, I don't know if I have them written down, but there is like some things that Sarah says or that or delivers. There's this subplot of ageism in this episode as well.
Yeah. But I feel like, all right, we'll get there. I don't want to get too off track with that.
I have one other note.
So early in the episode.
There's a weird shaky cam that keeps happening in this restaurant.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Like, it's not a steady camera that's like bouncing up and down, left and right. It was making me dizzy at one point. I don't know exactly if it was this or the next time they're here, but yeah, okay. They're in the restaurant. I think when there are people around, they're trying to get the idea it's like a disaster area. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was very like Cloverfield.
Yeah, I have seen that movie, and I've also, maybe I didn't notice it because I've been on like a weird found footage horror movie kick in the last three weeks.
Yeah. It has that sort of like found footage.
I've just been watching. Basically the only thing that I've been watching, so I think I'm so used to a not steady cam that I'm like, this is normal, this is fine, this is how movies, this is how like movie and TV is.
I literally go, what's with the shaky cam?
Yeah, didn't even notice.
I thought it was like one scene or like there was weird editing or something, and then all of a sudden I was like, it just won't stop.
So then, you know, Grissom ends up leaving to go to his crime scene. Sarah talks to the restaurant manager. He provides her with a seating chart and lets her know that it's like all digitalized. And then he gives, speaking of ageism, gives like an unprompted statement on elderly people driving. And Sarah was like, I didn't ask.
Like, yeah. See, in this scene, Sarah's like, I didn't ask.
Yeah. And so then Sarah goes over to Catherine and, you know, admits to Catherine that she, you know, got wrapped up with Hank, but now she's back in the game. She's here. And they realize that they're processing the car, which is a Jaguar, which they mentioned multiple times for ultimately no reason. Like, the fact that it's a Jaguar does not play into anything other than, like, they can go fast, but a lot of cars can go fast.
This is, like, a time where I think Jaguars were, like, cool. Like, we're at the tail end of, like, Jaguars being cool,
fancy
cars.
Yeah.
But they really weren't anymore.
Like, yeah. But they also know that it has a GPS in it. And so this was a very dated component of the show that they were like, whoa, fancy mounted GPS in the car.
Yeah, yeah. Aftermarket, TomTom. Yeah. What else? Garmin.
Yeah. So we then
MapQuest.
Yep. We're then with Nick and Grissom. They're at the gas leak scene. And as they're going through the house, they realize that there's no rotten egg smell. Like, usually if a gas leak is from...
Oh, I thought they were saying there was a rotten egg smell.
No, he was saying there usually is. And Nick was like, there's not. Like, I don't smell, you know, like I only smell... I can't remember what they said they smelled. They said there was not, like, usually there should be because...
Yeah, if there was a gas leak.
Yes, like gas is naturally odorless, but it is purposely scented. So if there is a leak... people can detect it.
Or, you know, if your roommates leave the grill on all the time.
I mean, I did have a pet sitter who left my gas stovetop on, and I came in and I was like, what is that smell? I was
very
like,
good.
This is so weird. And then I finally realized it, and I was like, hey, when you use my stovetop, can you just, like, doubly check, make sure that it's clicked all the way?
That's why it's in there, you know?
Yeah, but it's fine. No animals or... housing structures were hurt in the making. We then go into the bedroom. David, we're back with David. David's back
this
in
is
the
it.
Episode.
This is it, though.
This is it. Brief. Very brief moment.
Need that SAG card.
He's with the victim, who is hot pink. So the skin that we can see is, like, very hot pink.
Like alien from Star Trek.
Pink. Yes. We learn that, well, obviously she passed. Her husband left. And so... Grissom wants to talk to the husband. So Grissom and the detective are outside with the husband. He's recanting what he remembers of the night, that he, like, woke up and his head was spinning and he called 911 and that he must have passed out and he doesn't really remember anything until the paramedics show up. As they're talking, the husband references his son, Peter. So Grissom goes and approaches him and they have a very, like, terse conversation. And Grissom is trying to be... personable and say, like, oh, I'm really sorry about the loss of your mom. And he's just like, why are you sorry? You didn't do it. Like, you didn't know her. You don't know me. And I had to make note of this. Grissom, who we've talked countless times, not the best. He's not very socially savvy. He makes a lot of like faux pas, and he like doesn't quite like socialize with people the way that like most people are used to like socializing with one another. He looks at this kid like, "What is wrong with you? Yes. Like,
what? Why are you?"
Even I know how to manage a conversation better than this. Like, what are you doing?
So Peter, by the way, is a Spot the Guest star.
Sweet. I have a Spot the Guest star later, but Peter's not good. My Spot the Guest star.
I do not have a later Spot the Guest star.
Okay, I do. So
played by Jonathan Tucker. Peter was in a fun Boston TV show called The Black Donnellys. He's like one of the main characters.
Okay.
He's like the oldest brother, and it's about a bunch of kids in South Boston who get into crime. I forget exactly what they do. Rob banks or something.
Okay.
But yeah.
He's actually been in quite a few things. Nothing that I've seen, so I wouldn't, again, he's not a Spot the Guest star for me.
He's really young in this compared to the second there. But when he speaks, it's really obvious who he is.
Yeah.
There's only one season, and then there's a actress in that show who's a pretty big actress by today's standard, Olivia Wilde. And I think it was like one of the first things that she was in. I don't think I knew who she was when she was in that show.
Yeah, when she was in that show.
I think before she was on like House. She was on the Bridge of Sense of House. Yeah, it was a Boston show. I feel like I watched it. And I remember thinking like, oh yeah, whatever happened to that show? It just got canceled after one season.
As some shows do. Not this show, not the one we're reviewing right now, but some shows don't make it past that first season.
Yeah. We could have recorded the podcast for the Black Donnellys 10 times over by now.
Yes, we could have.
It's like half a season of episodes.
Yeah. Well, we'll spend a little bit more time with our first Spot the Guest star in a bit, but before then, we're with Sarah. She's at the hospital, and we learn that the driver is Diane Lambert. She has several doctors like currently working on her, doesn't look great, and her grandson is there. So Sarah goes to speak to her grandson, Corey, and this is my spot.
Oh!
The guest star is her grandson, Corey. So this is Christopher Gorham, and I think I know him from a few things, but what I know him from the most is Henry Grubstick from Ugly Betty.
I was like, I don't know that name at all. I do know the show Ugly Betty. I've never watched it.
He was in 35 episodes of Ugly Betty, and that is where I primarily know him from. But he's
been 75 episodes of a show called Covert Affairs.
Oh, I didn't even know. I don't know what that show is. But yes, he was also in Once Upon a Time, and I probably also know him from Once Upon a Time. Like, there's like a few other things that I was like, oh yeah, I probably do. Like, I probably did see him in this, and
why he looked familiar to me, because I didn't really pin him. I couldn't like put him to anything. I was just what I often write off as the, oh, he looks like a lot of actors of that time or something.
Yeah,
right?
Because
the casting directors are like that. Man, he's in a bunch of stuff.
He's in a lot of things.
He's in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I probably remember him from that as well.
I definitely don't remember anyone from one episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
No. But I'm sure I saw him.
Apparently he was the Wizard of Oz in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, I heard you say he was in Once Upon a Time and he was a character.
Oh, maybe I didn't. Maybe I just read it and then I didn't say it out loud.
Wizard of Oz just sounds like a big character, but he's only in three episodes.
So that's my Spot the Guest star. Yeah. So Sarah's talking to him. And he's saying that he like has no idea why his grandmother was here in Vegas. She like hates the area. They live like 2 hours away. We also learn in this exchange that she won the Jaguar, which again, no impact on the rest of the story. Just felt like I'm just going to throw that.
It's a little Vegas-y, I guess.
Yep. And then he's the one who gifted her the GPS.
Yep.
So this will
which
come
those
up again.
Were not. Cheap.
They were not cheap.
I don't know where we are in 2003-ish in terms like this is pre-cell phone. My family didn't have one in 2003. I don't think
I had one until like 2007 or 2008, yeah, probably.
They got cheap right before cell phones started being a thing. Like smartphones.
Oh, like using, yeah.
Like 2007, they started getting cheaper, I think.
Yeah.
And then like by like 2009, 2010, all of a sudden everybody had one on their phone.
Yeah, they were like, man, I don't need this big clunky unit anymore. But Sarah ends up walking away from Corey because she sees Hank. And she is trying to heap praise onto Hank. He's not having it. He's deflecting and saying that Elaine is one of the lucky ones. So the woman that he was speaking to that was in the wheelchair. So they have a little bit of a conversation. Sarah offers to drive him home. He says, no, like, I drove here, I'm good. We then have Catherine and Warwick at the intersection, so right outside of the restaurant. And they have a little bit of talk about internal affairs, but no talk about why he was talking about internal affairs. No, because I was like, trying to think, and I was like, there's been no recent thing that he's done in the show.
Yeah, Grissom, like, in the first episode or the very first scene, it was like he's coming from Eternal Affairs, and then mm-hmm. they mention, but yeah, we don't
know why.
Have any idea why he'd be talking about Eternal Affairs. So leftover from his old judge bribery days, maybe.
I don't know. We don't know.
I'm guessing that it's out of order.
Like, ooh, yeah, they shot.
Maybe we're gonna get something like next couple episodes is gonna come up. It's gonna, you know, and they just didn't quite edit it around it.
That could very well be. We'll find out as we continue watching. Warwick does spot a red light camera. Catherine finds fresh motor oil. She posits that the car bucked as it went over the
curb.
Curb, thank you.
Jumped the curb, so
to speak. It's been a week, guys. Inside of the restaurant, Warwick finds tire tread. So at least it appears that the brakes were working. It doesn't seem like the brakes were inoperable.
They don't really explain the braking, but I think the idea is that, like, as you start crashing into people or she hit her head in the wheel, like, her foot pushed, you know what I mean? Like, freaked out, pushing their brake.
Yep.
So sort of this delayed braking implies that there's not a mechanical issue.
Right. Yes. We then have Sarah with Doc Robbins. This is a Doc Robbins heavy episode, by the way.
Yes.
We have quite a few scenes with Doc Robbins.
I thought they were going to get more and more into this. Well, it's a good scene, but they're obviously using him because he's kind of an elderly character.
Yeah. Yeah. So we learn basically died due to the injury to her head when the car crashed. And Sarah, I will say, Sarah does posit this, like, essentially saying, I'm trying to not be ageist, but was there any sign of a stroke or a heart attack?
To do all of that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so Doc Robbins says that there is no indication of any age-related factors. So nothing in his exam turned up anything age-related that would contribute to why she crashed her car through this building. So then we have Nick and the detective in the bedroom, and we learn that the kid checked out. So they think, like, I assume they mean, like, he's healthy, he's good. So they think that the carbon monoxide poisoning came from
the source
of it was the bedroom, because it's like the parents were affected, the Peter was not. So they then look to the fireplace, because the detective's dad was a firefighter, so I guess the two biggest, like, sources are improperly working fireplaces and I think, like, space heaters, essentially.
Yeah.
And there's no space heaters. So they go check out the fireplace. Nick finds a warm foreign substance there and then realizes that the damper's busted. So the lever that should let the smoke go up, the flue.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. It's busted.
I will say, like, it's very California, because, like, furnaces, natural gas stoves, where we live in the Northeast, like, that's a much bigger, like, those are major carbon monoxide issues.
Yeah.
But, like, in California, I don't even know how space heaters are producing carbon monoxide.
I don't know either.
I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying, like for that to be number two, I was like, you didn't even talk about water heaters or things. And I was because they don't have them, because they don't have natural gas.
Nope.
Like we have out there, like we have out here, because we need it to heat our homes in the winter.
Yeah, because we get cold. So this leads Nick to believe it's not an accident. But before we do more research on that, Greg Sanders approaches Sarah and he tries to infer that the case is Hank's case. And Sarah's like, no, it's my case. And Greg Sanders is like, ooh, territorial, guys don't like that. And I was like, ew.
Yeah.
Greg Sanders, gross. Why? I understand from, like, a storyline perspective why they make Greg Sanders be this character, but I hate when they make Greg Sanders be this character. I don't like it, because I like Greg Sanders, but not when he's this level of Greg Sanders.
Easy.
But he does at least come bearing some information, which then sort of helps out, but not really. We learned that Mrs. Lambert tested positive for sativa, so she had THC in her system. So Sarah goes back to Doc Robbins and is like, hey, was she legally impaired? do to the THC in her system. And Doc Robbins is like, no, like legally, her level is not high enough to consider her impaired. But it did cause him to investigate why this grandmother might be using. And again, signs of the time. Marijuana was not legal in any state at this point.
It may have been legal in California on a card, on a medical
card. Not a medical card, yeah, maybe.
They were like the first ones.
Yeah. The amount of people who are open about smoking marijuana today versus 20 years ago, vast difference. So the fact that like an older woman who smoked marijuana was also, like, oh my goodness.
I very much love the, first up, unless you're like somewhere between the ages of like 13 and 30, no matter how you do it, whenever you refer to drugs in any way, you're never going to sound cool.
No.
So I enjoyed the sort of various ways in which these characters on this episode refer to, any form. Like, I guess, but it happens in like other episodes, other drugs as well. But
oh, yeah.
Any form of any drug is always like in the writers of the show seem to like to spin the wheel with names too.
Yeah, they literally do
it just to make the actors say weird things.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like Sativa with Greg. It's Mary Jane, which is a very sort of like.
Yeah. It's grass. Sarah says grass, but she's like, oh, wow. She smokes grass. Didn't
someone call it dope at one point? And I was like, I don't know that I've ever thought of like calling pot dope. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't think dope is like other drugs.
Yeah.
But again, I'm actually one of the worst people to ask because the most of my drug exposure in my life has been being at concerts.
Yeah, like secondhand drug exposure. Yeah. So Doc Robbins does investigate a little bit further, though, to try to figure out why she had THC in her system and she had glaucoma. And so there's a conversation about, how some people use glaucoma to help with the reduce the swelling in the eyes and things of that nature. But again, Doc Robbins is saying, this does not impact the crash. Like, neither her glaucoma or the THC is a deciding factor in the crash.
I wish it was more like, Sarah, I would have told you if it was relevant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, it first seemed like there was, but this one, I guess maybe it wasn't less ageism. He starts becoming more defensive. Like, the body is not like, the victim is not going to tell you why the car crashed, but it's like so standoffish. I don't get the tension.
I didn't get the tension either. Because let's tackle that when we get to like the final scene between Sarah and Doc Robbins. But so then we have Catherine looking over the digital seating chart. Sarah enters. Catherine wants to know who Elaine Alcott is because her and Hank were sitting together.
I've been to a lot of fancy restaurants. It takes a really fancy restaurant for them to know the name of everyone in a party.
100% it does.
Now, I can maybe assume they did a little bit further investigation. Obviously, Elaine Alcott also went to the hospital.
And, yes.
They could have done other detective work. But the implication is like this is all in the reservation system. And I'm like,
it's all in the reservation
system. I'm like, that's not how reservations work.
No, it's the one person who makes a reservation and then I'm bringing three people with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for storyline purposes, we know who it is. Warwick walks in. We learn that Lambert ran the red light at 52 miles per hour. So she was going pretty fast. So Sarah now realizes she needs to go check the car. So we get a little montage of Sarah inspecting the car to see if there's anything wrong with the car that could explain why she kept accelerating through the intersection. Warwick enters. We learn car checks out perfectly fine. Like nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with the car that would explain this incident. But they do learn, Warwick points out, that this like specific red light camera catches like four times as many offenders as any other light in Las Vegas. So they're like, okay, this must be a dangerous intersection.
Additional causes. Yeah.
So we'll follow that. But before we do, we have a very strange scene where Nick walks into the lab where David Hodges is working.
Yeah.
And Hodges is just immediately not nice to Nick.
Like, I think this is the first scene with those two characters together.
Yes, it is. It is the first scene with them together ever.
He's only been in one other episode.
So maybe this is another,
out of order.
Yes. Maybe this is another indication that this is an out of order episode because like there's no context for this.
Is this a thing that persists Like, is this like part of their dynamic? Because the or at least for some of the seasons as it goes on, because I thought they were like trying to set it up and like, okay, they'll come back to explain that something happened. And Nick's, I don't know, there was a scene even this episode where he like refers to the Peter as science nerd when he looks at his room and he's like, oh, yeah. I guess it takes one to know one. Like, Nick always sort of has that, like, I'm the frat boy.
Yeah,
you're the nerd type of interaction with people. But and so I thought maybe they were trying to set that up, but I was like, yeah, it did feel like we were already supposed to think something about these characters.
Yeah, but no, this is the first scene that they have together. So then Grissom walks in and Hodges just does a 180. He's like perky and helpful and wants to talk to Grissom, and we learn that the substance found in the fireplace is carbon and it has micropores. And so upon further inspection, it's actually activated charcoal. So that is what...
I feel like activated charcoal these days is so prevalent.
Yes.
Like, it's in everything. It's gimmicky. It's part of like fake health science. And
yep.
No, it definitely existed. We actually had activated charcoal in my house growing up. It was for poison control.
Yeah,
like my parents, it's probably the same bottle my parents got when we were like 2 years old.
Yeah.
It was in the closet for 20 years.
Yep.
Because, you know, if your kid swallowed something, that was one of the things you could do is give them activated charcoal or you rush them to the hospital.
Yeah.
But yeah, now it's in all sorts of stuff. And where they inevitably tie it back to it has a very real use there.
It's a fact.
But it was kind of like, yeah, I feel like most people this time would have no idea what activated charcoal was.
Yeah.
Whereas
so, I mean,
most people would know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, Nick does give a few examples in the scene of like what...
Yeah, they do an explainer. For
yeah,
sure.
He does like a little explainer. We then are with Sarah and Warwick. They're outside the restaurant. They're in the rain. They are discussing how the sun might be a factor in the crash. And so, again, just another weird scene.
I actually thought that was going to be the cause.
It's so... Like, spoiler alert.
When he's doing this intersection, I wrote down sun flare ? And they were at the scene and I went, it's way too early for this to be the real reason. Like,
yeah, so They do some crazy math calculations inside of their head and realize that at the time of the accident that the sun would have been behind the trees. So sun, not a factor in this crash. Then Grissom and Nick are with Greg Sanders in the lab. And we learn that as far as saturation levels go, Mr. Arnes was 10% less. Hence, he's alive and his wife is not. But they both had high nicotine levels because they thought for a moment, oh, maybe she had higher saturation levels because she was a smoker and he was not. But it was like, no, he also had high nicotine levels. She also had sleeping pills in her system, but she did not have a prescription for them.
Correct. Maybe it's
husband did though.
Maybe I should take a moment to do a quick science with Nick for anybody who's at home who doesn't quite understand carbon monoxide. Obviously, so in short, obviously it's dangerous, it's bad for you, it's also very reactive, but the where carbon monoxide comes from, and this is it'll be relevant to understand the smoking, is it typically happens when the combustion reagents are just not mixing well enough. So you're not getting enough oxygen to the carbon or something like that, and you instead of having one carbon and two oxygens, you only have enough oxygen, you end up with carbon and oxygen, because otherwise they kind of like interact with more oxygen and on the carbon monoxide will turn to CO2, which you're breathing out all the time.
Yeah.
So smokers, they're smoking, they literally have oxygen starved fires at the tips of their mouths.
Yeah.
That will drive up carbon monoxide. I have actually no idea how they measure saturation. It's obviously not the percentage of the total percentage of your blood. Maybe it's the maximum amount that you can absorb, or it's based on something else. But so the dosing, they make a big deal about this episode because, you know, there's sort of this lethality point. My guess is it's not, I don't know how wide the range is, but it's not like, you know, you're perfectly fine, you die. As a husband mentioned, like, he was wheezy or dizzy.
He was dizzy, yep.
There's definitely going to be, like, effects, and I'm sure some people, for different reasons, would be more or less susceptible, but they sort of pin at the normal amount. But it's sort of becomes important. They dance around these percentages a lot.
They do.
And they may be over-lean on this later on in the episode. But yeah, so if you're wondering, like, why are people with smoking running around with 10% carbon monoxide all the time? It's because the smoke they're breathing in has a bunch of carbon monoxide in it, because it's not you know, really combusting super well.
Yeah.
And so forth. But yeah, so that's what's going on. So obviously he has nicotine in his system, and they explain this pretty quickly or shortly after, mm-hmm. but his carbon monoxide level wasn't as high, and they don't really understand that yet.
They don't understand why yet. Before we figure that out, Catherine is looking at a computer reenactment of the crash. Sarah enters, and we learn that she was going, when she was clocked by the red light camera, she was going 52 miles per hour. But when she hit the newspaper stand, according to the computer calculations, she was going 60 miles per hour. So she actually accelerated going into this building.
It didn't seem like a big enough gap to really like be 100% certain on a circa 2003 computer simulation. But the idea is give them the benefit of the doubt.
Give them the benefit of the doubt in this one. Sarah is back with Doc Robbins, and she wants to know the blood count levels. And Dr. Robbins is like, why? Like, basically, what more do you want from me? Like, what more do you, like, I've already told you that this body doesn't have any more answers for you. And, but he does, you know, he acquiesces and he provides the results. And essentially the results show that she was in a high level of stress.
Yeah. They make reference to these kamikaze pilots.
And they end up calling her Kamikaze Granny, which is probably going to be the name of the episode.
That better be the name of this episode.
It has to be the name of the episode. As soon as I heard it, I was like, well, that has to be the name of the episode. So before we follow up on Kamikaze Granny, though, we're with Nick and Grissom. They're at a hardware store. Grissom approaches Peter. They're talking.
It's about their hardware store.
It's hardware store.
Say that, but it says their last name on their shirts.
It is their hardware store. And they are talking about the novel and the writer that Peter's reading. And then they talk.
Isaac Asimov.
Yes.
Fit. And they mention him again later on in the episode.
Yeah. And they have a bit of a conversation about how science is about the quest. And there's quite a few conversations on the heart of science and why someone pursues science. This is one of those conversations
important to the storyline, and maybe the later we could talk about it later when it's a little less spoily. It's important. I think the storyline is important to the characters involved.
Yes. They then talk to Mr. Arnes, where we learn that he drugged his wife, because heaven forbid his wife wants to talk to him.
This was so over the top.
Horrendous. Like,
first off, you tell me your wife every single night talks to you so much that neither of you are getting sleep. Like,
seriously.
Not just like everyone's. It makes it sound like it's every day.
Every day. Like, he never has.
Which, like, maybe you shouldn't be together.
I think you shouldn't, because you shouldn't be drugging your significant other. Also, maybe, because we get almost no context for this. So this is just me reaching and me being just like angry at the storyline. But it seems like she is a stay-at-home mom / housewife, you know what I mean? Because she's like, oh, well, I'm here all day. And, you know, like, when you come home, you don't, you know, I just want to talk. But maybe encourage your wife to pick up some hobbies and make some friends. And,
come work at the store.
Something, anything.
It's a hardware store. You telling me you can't teach her a job?
She can't stand behind the register and talk to your customers?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, again, I get that it's for the storyline. It just, with everything happening in our country this week, this just like really, really rubbed me the wrong way that he would just, A, see talking to his wife as such a chore, and then also paint his wife as like, essentially this like nagging, oh, look at how much she wants from me. Yeah, and I work so hard. And then I get home and, oh, she wants me to have sex with her. And then like, and then, oh gosh, I also have to talk to her. Don't be married, man. Like you said, if you dislike your wife this much, don't be married to your wife anymore.
Yeah. Your son is 18 years old.
He's 18 years old. He's an adult. You
stay together for him.
So, but I guess technically more importantly, we learn that he quit smoking about 3 weeks ago and he's wearing a nicotine patch.
I get, maybe there's about to say, is the sort of accidentalness of the drugging is probably important or something.
No, he did it purposely last night. The first time he did it accidentally.
Yeah, it happened on accident. So he didn't just start drugging his wife. He just kept drugging his wife after
accidentally
She technically accidentally drugged herself.
Yes.
But I think I think it's important because, like, the way he reacts here, you realize that, like, you start to get the idea that, okay, this character was not trying to kill his wife.
Yeah. And we also learn in this scene, this is actually, I think, how we end the scene, is that he had asked Peter to fix the damper.
Yeah, he only, like, half says it.
Yeah.
And, like, then kind of trails off.
And then it says, like, is this my fault? And did I, you know what I mean? Like, did I do this? Spoiler alert, he didn't. I mean, he drugged his wife and did maybe questionable other things, but he did not murder her.
Yeah, the survivor's remorse guilt in this episode is through the roof.
Yeah, yeah, he seems really broken up working at his hardware store like a day after his wife died. Yeah. But yeah, good times. We then have a Sarah and Catherine walk and talk, in which they're discussing, was someone a target? Like, was this like a targeted drive-through of this building? And if so, like, who was the target? So they're kind of going through the list, and then they realize that 3 out of the 5 people that were like right at the window worked at Silmont Healthcare. So they're like, maybe that's something to investigate. So Sarah goes to Elaine's, and Elaine is saying she doesn't recognize Mrs. Lambert, but she'll, you know, she'll like log on to her laptop and, you know, see if she can find her. And as she's doing that, Sarah sees a picture of Elaine with Hank, like a very
worst picture of Hank ever, by the way.
It's not a great picture of Hank.
I could read into what the scene was supposed to be saying, but I was like, I was like, that doesn't look like Hank.
Yeah. And we learn that Hank is her boyfriend and they're like going to Tahiti next month. And
yeah, which you would wonder if he was going away, like Sarah would have some idea, but.
But I mean, he could just say he's going away with like some of his dude friends and.
Yeah, I guess. You know. To PG. Yeah.
I mean, I think he would say he was going away, but not tell her where or with who. But we also learn in the scene that Miss Lambert is not on Elaine's list. So we'll come back around to that one, though. Grissom is back at the house. He's looking at a fish tank. And after looking at it for a bit, he checks the filter. Peter enters. We learn that he crossed the yellow tape to come back into his house. Like, yep. There is crime scene tape up, and he was just like, well, it's my house, I'm just gonna go in there.
After earlier, like 2 scenes ago, asking if they can go back in, saying no, you can't.
Yeah. So we also learned in this exchange that he threatened his English teacher, and maybe most importantly of all, the filter in his fish tank is out of charcoal.
Yep.
So whoopsie-daisy-dins. So then we have Nick and Grissom with Peter in interrogation, and essentially, they end up having this conversation about, you know, well, if all the variables were consistent, like their carbon monoxide saturation levels really should be the same, but they weren't the same. Like, that's curious, you know, all this sort of stuff.
I hate this scene.
Continue.
There's some things they're trying to do in this scene. They're trying to talk about the specific percentages in the blood and why that was important, maybe why the father lived. They're also trying to like establish the nerdiness of Peter, right?
I don't know if I would say nerdiness. Like, I would say single-mindedness.
It's more that like the specific scientific equation that he would have had to do to figure out precisely how much activated charcoal to put into a fireplace to kill
both his parents.
But there's like a lot of like sort of crossed wires here. For one, his mother was at 45%, which they've established as lethal. And there's a bunch of unburned charcoal in the fireplace.
Yes.
Implying that the number would go much higher.
Yes.
But also like, why settle? You would have to like weigh out with like a finely like a big scale. Why stop at try to hit exactly at 45 or exactly at 50 when you could just keep going, you know? You know, you would just put enough, you would have a buffer in there. And so it's like they were trying to both like set it up as like this very specific thing, but also like they were kind of contradicting themselves. It's like bad science, and if they had done it well, it would have been such a better scene. And that's why I hate it. Okay. I hate it because it was a good idea.
Yeah,
that they just phoned it in.
Yeah.
But one of the great, the one thing I did like in this scene is through all of this conversation, like techie conversation, Grissom gets Peter to, he can't help himself because he likes the math and the science.
Yes.
To contribute to the conversation about the precise calculation.
Yes.
Like, why do you already know the answer to this question, kid?
Right.
Like, you know, that's really like the nail in the coffin. That's like the aha, got you moment, which I don't even think the audience, average audience member gets. Hopefully they do, but like.
Yeah, they were baiting him. They were baiting him into the scientific conversation.
Yeah. Same way they do emotionally with other people. They use his sort of love of science and math to do it here.
To bait him into this,
and,
yes.
And that was actually a good part of the scene. So I hate the scene because I have mixed feelings. I also actually was, I hate it a little less than I thought I hated it because I was still so confused by the natural gas thing. Like, why was there a natural gas leak? What does that have to do? And not realizing that I misheard in the opening scene.
In the opening scene,
yeah. There was not a natural gas
leak. There was not a natural gas
leak. They were responding like a natural gas leak because somebody died in their sleep and was a weird color.
Yes.
So,
but there was not actually.
That makes the scene a little less worse than it was the first time I heard it.
Yeah.
But I also have to say, calling 911 does not turn off your fireplace. So, like, it would have kept building up. And I mean, the father did say he passed back out.
Yeah.
But it would have kept as the, you know, emergency responders arrived, like, which is not 30 seconds, you know? So.
No. But we also learned in the scene that essentially, well, Grissom is saying that the reason that this experiment essentially of Peter's didn't pan out is that Peter made one of the sort of unforgivable mistakes of science, which is that he stopped observing the human element. Like, he didn't know his dad quit smoking. Yep. And thus he didn't take into the equation that would affect his saturation levels because he didn't even realize that his dad had quit smoking. Yeah, he
was banking on that fact. And they could have got away with it if they were like, yeah, you are banking on your not being a smoker to keep you from dying. Because his room was next door.
Yeah, it was next door.
But also, he could have just opened a window.
He could have just opened a window, yeah.
Southern California, or Las Vegas, is warm every night.
And Nick wants to go a little bit further. He wants to know why. Like, why would you kill your parents? Like, you killed your mom, you almost killed your dad, why? And Grissom figures it out, though. Because we learn that he was accepted to Princeton. But his parents weren't going to let him go.
No. And we're going to pay for it.
We're going to pay for it. Thus, he wasn't going to be able to go. And so that is why
the weird financial aid system in America, where your parents are assumed to be paying for your college,
yep,
and any other form of that just leaves you high and dry, which is
pretty accurate. Still accurate.
Yeah. Which is awful because, like, there are a lot of people in homes who want nothing to do with their parents when they turn 18.
Yep.
Enough that, like, oftentimes just going, you know, I don't want to encourage young people to rack up massive amounts of college debt.
I wouldn't do that.
There's oftentimes going away, getting an education, and being away from your house for 4 years is a great way to start over.
Very true. Very, very true. So that wraps up that storyline, but we have quite a bit more to get through in storyline A. So Sarah walks into a room where Catherine is and says that, you know, Elaine didn't really have anything to add. Jim Brass ends up coming in. This is where we learn this Mrs. Lampert had, like, paid off all her credit cards. She'd updated her will. So this is starting to look more and more intentional.
Kamikaze grandma's really.
Kamikaze granny is really, really focused in here. They are also looking at her phone records and realize that there's only, like, one Vegas number that she's been calling, and she's been calling it 80 times. She's been calling it like two or three times a day, every day for the last, like, 2 months. They're like, what is going on? So Sarah dials the number. Look at that. It's Stillmont Healthcare. And so they are starting to wonder, was Stillmont Healthcare the intended target? And then we have this was just a funny, like, yes, this was, I remember where there was news stories about this, like, how unreliable GPSs were. Because Jim Brass was like, well, if I followed my GPS, like, I would have ended up in the lake. And I was like, I remember those news stories. I remember the news stories of the people ending up in the lake and saying, I mean, that they did because they followed their GPS.
When, like, 5 years ago when Apple Maps came out, that was still a problem.
That is true. But I do specifically remember this from time.
And I've definitely been at the recipient of the GPS doesn't know who you are or wants to bring you down, like, a dirt road.
Yeah, and you're like, no,
it's not, like, doing chained it. Off. You're like, I can't go that way.
Yeah, I can't go. And it's like, no, go down this way. And you're like, I cannot. Yeah. Oh, GPS. So then we have Sarah and Catherine with Elaine, and who I assume is her boss. They don't really ever fully introduce this character, but I just kind of make assumptions. And this is where we find out this Mrs. Lampert had colon cancer, a reoccurrence of it. She had colon cancer. Her colon cancer came back, and essentially her doctor wanted to do, like, aggressive treatment, like immediate aggressive treatment. And this healthcare company was essentially letting the claim sit in limbo. Thus, she couldn't appeal it because it hadn't been denied.
Yep.
but she also couldn't get treatment because it hadn't been approved. And so she was literally just stuck in recommendation pending zone.
Yeah.
Do we
gloss over the fact that the offices of this healthcare company are like 179 North and the restaurant was at like 179 South?
Yes. It was 16. They were at 16 North Meadow, I believe, and the restaurant was 16 South Meadow. Yeah. And that was one of the, like, did she put the wrong address in because they were so close to each other? Or did
chance, that's where they decided to all go eat dinner after work. Yep. Presumably on the opposite side of town because it's on the north and south side of a major road.
I think they mentioned that it was nearby, but I don't, yeah. I could be wrong.
Yeah. I just remember, like, I didn't even get on the first watch through that was Elaine.
Yeah.
She didn't have like that big collar on.
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be somebody else. And then I was sort of like, because you see a lot of her face a lot more in this scene. When I saw her in the earlier scene, the second time through, I went, oh, that's the same person. And I was like, wait, what? I thought it was going to be a completely different set of people than the, and that's why they didn't find the records. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was a very weird, like it's like an unnecessary breadcrumb for those two things to be related. Like that could have been completely different people and the storyline would have still worked, but yes. They kind of made it the same way. And it's like, I guess I'm not supposed to feel so bad for Elaine now that her boyfriend is a two-timing.
I feel kind of bad, but yeah, I think
she's denying a poor cancer lady treatment. How am I supposed to feel bad for her? Just because her boyfriend cheated on her? I'm sorry. One of those things is way worse than the other.
This is true. This is very true.
I also can't feel bad for a cancer lady because she murdered a bunch of people. Technically, her mistake was oddly fortunate in punishing the group of people she was hoping to punish as a result.
This is true.
I don't know if it's supposed to be karma. That feels wrong to say.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, these are all fake scenarios, guys. Yeah. We're not talking about real events here. This
is all over the place. Yeah. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was just another, it's been a really tough week in our country here. And then just like having a reminder of how terrible our healthcare was. I was like, oh, gosh, this episode just keeps like digging the knife and twisting it. I was like, stop.
Our healthcare, our education system.
How men think about women. Like how men think about their wives.
Treat them.
Yep.
Or say things to them. Or people who are different than them. Whether it's ageism.
Yep. Yeah. But we then have a very short scene with Sarah and Catherine. And Sarah's like, I think we missed something. So we pop into interrogation with Corey. And...
poor Corey.
Okay. Yes. I was just about to say, for reasons that they never really flesh out, they suddenly turn on Corey.
Yeah.
They're suddenly like, were you aware of your grandmother's actions? Like, your fingerprints were on the GPS. And it's like, yeah, like, maybe occasionally I put coordinates in for my grandmother. Like, what?
And
why?
Like, and nothing's changed. Like, 20 years later, people still have to help their grandmother put in their GPS.
100%. And
also, and Corey, like, in the first scene you meet Corey, like,
he seems legitimately upset.
Sarah only thinks he's a family member because he's literally distraught on a bench crying behind her.
Right.
It's like, that's not the kind of person who killed his grandmother.
No. And they're trying to say, well, like, well, you were the sole beneficiary of the life insurance policy. So, like, really? You didn't know that this was her plan? And he was like, no, I would have stopped her. Like, I loved my grandmother.
And they're like, oh, well, too bad. You're not going to get any money now.
Seriously? So then just like, oh, well, you know, she committed suicide, you know, so you're not going to see any of that money. And he's like, this, I will say.
This is what I was referring to earlier. I was like, there's this and there's another weird walk and talk scene with Sarah where a couple times I was like, why are our characters so mean to people this episode?
This is just uncalled for. But I will say, the only part of the scene where I was like, all right, kudos, is our spot the guest star, Christopher Gorham, as he ends the scene. Does a fantastic job. And he's like, so you're telling me, like, he's just having these two women, like, yelling, at, like, almost yelling at him, saying that he was in cahoots with his grandmother to, like, pull this whole thing off, and, like, his grandmother dying and killing all these people. And he's like, okay. He's like, So you're telling me that she killed these people for me, and now you want me to live with that? And I was like, yes. Why are they doing this to you, Corey? Right? Yeah. I don't understand.
Like, also, like, where's the line where, like, also, like, technically she didn't kill them for him. She just killed them for her because she was going to die anyway. She was going to die of cancer, and he was going to get a pile of money anyways.
Yeah, she didn't kill them for him. She wanted revenge, and she was like, well, I'm going to die anyway because I'm going to drive my car into this building and take revenge. So I might as well make sure that my grandson is taken care of as part of this. But she didn't kill them for him. She was enacting revenge and was like, well, if I'm going to enact revenge, I might as well help my grandson at the same time.
She had to already have health insurance or life insurance, right? Because you don't give somebody with cancer life insurance.
No. No, she just changed the beneficiary to him.
She just made it to him because she loves him.
Yes.
More than, you know, probably his parents.
Yeah.
Which presumably are still alive. They never mentioned them once.
We never mentioned them once, so we don't really know the status of the parents, but.
Yeah. Yeah, no, poor Corey. Like, he.
I don't understand the scene at all. I literally do not understand the scene. I was like, why are we doing this to Corey? Poor Corey was just like a really nice grandson trying to help his grandmother out.
Yeah. And he's staying out of town. He's hanging around trying to take care of things, you know?
Yeah. And then they just like go for his throat. They go for his jugular. And I don't understand why.
They're just taking her emotions out on Corey.
Poor Corey. Yeah. So then, you know, they assumedly just leave Corey in interrogation to stew in those thoughts.
Well, and Catherine just lost a family member in a car accident.
Just lost a family member in a car accident. Hank approaches Sarah. Catherine is like, me out in the car, like, not getting involved in this. And so she leaves. And Sarah's like, look, Hank, I didn't tell Elaine. Like, basically, I know that's the only reason you're here to talk to me is to, like, see.
Did I blow up your spot?
Yeah, did I blow up your spot?
Because your girlfriend is a two-timing insurance agent.
You deserve each other.
You got three people killed indirectly.
You monsters deserve each other.
I hope she has a cheating boyfriend for the rest of her life.
And he's just like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what else there is to say. And she's like, yeah. Which I will say.
That's what he'll be like, are we broken up?
I will say. As someone that has made some very questionable dating decisions in my life, I've definitely had this conversation with guys before.
Oh.
Where they're like, I don't know what else to say. And I'm like,
I heard that line and I was like, there's nothing for you. What are you trying to accomplish?
They are trying
to make alone.
They are trying to make themselves feel better.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean,
obviously. That is when they say, oh, I don't know what else to say is they're waiting for you to reassure them.
I don't think I can fix this.
Yeah, like I don't know what you want me to do. I don't. But she's just like, I'll see you around. Because like they're gonna see each other in like a professional capacity. Like he's gonna be at crime scenes as she's.
Yeah, that's true.
So she's just like, I'll see you around, and she leaves. And so Sarah goes and joins Catherine in the car, and Catherine is like, hey, do you have any plans? Beer. Sarah's like, drive. And then end of episode. So, Nick. What did you think about today's episode?
You could say this episode crash and burns. Especially the end. The episode was already in my mind having troubles. The last scene of storyline A and the last scene of storyline B made both of those storylines worse. This was a hard episode to get through. I gave it a skip. Mm-hmm. I haven't given a lot of straight up skips.
Yep.
I was considering giving it like a 1, but I ended up giving it a 2. There's some stuff in this episode that isn't complete garbage, but the episode really struggles to come together.
It does.
It's choppy. It's like the tempo isn't there. There's a few kind of like key moments that are pretty good, but like, and obviously there is a personal storyline, which makes it a little hard to say skip, but considering at the start of this episode, I couldn't remember if
they were together or not,
and it didn't really matter to me. Then like, it's not the most critical storyline. Also, it's basically, I assume, one of the last times we're ever going to see Hank. This is not a Rachel Ross get back together type situation.
Yeah.
It's definitely, I think it's a, if you're going to skip episodes, this is like the top of the bar where I say starts skipping episodes, and maybe probably I should have given, I've considered a 1.5 pretty strongly. Oh, okay. And then I settled on 2 just because, and actually I'm more happy I settled on 2 knowing that I had a mistake earlier, because my big rant was a little less ridiculous. It was still not a great scene. It was also hard to follow. I watched that scene 4 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I watched that. I went back and rewatched that scene because I was having trouble like understanding the logic of what they were trying to say because it wasn't adding up.
Yeah.
And the scene itself, I was like, I don't think how anyone can really follow what they're saying now. They didn't structure it well or play it out right. I totally get what they were trying to do. It's actually kind of clever. It's, but you know what? Like, if you're Tony Hawk and you're trying to like land a brand new trick, nobody cares when you miss it 30 times. Right. Only you only get credit when you land it.
When you
and
land
they
it.
Didn't
yeah.
they didn't land it.
So I also am giving a 2 out of 5 for this episode. It just, again, I will fairly admit that I'm in a not the best emotional mental place at the moment, given the state of our country. And that probably affected how I felt, because there's just certain scenes that I was like, yeah, this is really twisting the knife and it's hurting me. I think I would have disliked it anyway.
Maybe at best it was going to be a 2.5.
Maybe at best it was going to be a 2.5. The only, I shouldn't say the only, but one of the redeeming things in this episode, but I wouldn't like subject someone to watching the whole episode just for this, but it's at least like, I felt like these were like shining little moments in this episode. There's a lot of like little but impactful moments between the main cast.
Yeah.
So like when Sarah is coming out from work out of the car and she has like a smudge on her face, and Warwick is like, oh, hey, you have a smudge. And she tries it and he's like, no, you're good. Like, you're fine. Like, that was like a cute little interaction. Yeah. And then like outside in the rain was like a cute little interaction. And then like Catherine, we just had the episode where Catherine was like at Sarah's throat,
yeah,
because of Eddie's death. And again, maybe this is an out of order episode. This is something we should look up, because I do appreciate that Catherine was like there for her woman, right? Like, she was like, hey, screw yeah. that guy, Hank. Let's go get some beers and like hang out and commiserate. I appreciated that.
So, I almost wish they like leaned into that, right? Like, where of like the forgiveness and the, we have to draw that inference because they don't really do it.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I'm, you know, whatever. It doesn't look like it's out of order based on the episode number.
Weird. It feels like it, which definitely brings it down on the rating. Because it definitely feels like it's not, it feels like we're missing things.
Apparently the first and second episodes were reversed.
Oh, interesting.
Revenge is Best Served Cold was our first episode. But The Accused is Entitled is actually the 301 episode.
I don't remember there being, I mean, maybe if I went back and watched them now with that knowledge, I'd be able to like tell that. But I don't remember when watching it, if I had anything standing out to me that I was like, oh yeah, this doesn't, like this episode felt out of place. But I don't remember feeling that way with those episodes.
You know what The Internal Affairs could be a reference to is the community center. Like, did they drop something from an episode in between those? And this was supposed to be like, oh, it's all resolved now.
Yeah, maybe you're
because
right.
Because he definitely went lied to the person, like pretended he needed the address.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, why didn't you tell? Like, you should have phoned us. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
And we're watching these like one a week.
One a week. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's right. I was trying to think, like, what would work? Have done.
That's why I was like, I literally was like, you're probably right. Well,
that was episode 13, so 4 episodes ago.
Okay. I mean, yeah, so like not that long ago. It feels like a lifetime ago, but
yeah.
So we'll see if our next episode crashes and burns. I hope not. But we'll find out when we return next week to review season 3, episode 18, Precious Metal. In the meantime, you can find us on Patreon by searching for Who Are You Calling a CSI Podcast. You can find us on Facebook the same way. We're also on Twitter/X. We'll see for how much longer. And Instagram at @WhoAreYouCSIPod. We also have a website, whoAreYouCSIPod.com. But otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.